Hello, and welcome to ASCII's podcast show, Can We Talk? Conversations in Early Childhood Education. In today's episode, a conversation on the pedagogy of listening, you'll hear Paula Honadel from ASCII have a conversation with Rosalba Bortolotti on the pedagogy of listening and what that really means for educators when working with children. The conversations in today's podcast are part of a series of conversations with Rosalba. In episode 5, we had a conversation with Rosalba on environments and relationships. And in a future episode, we'll have another conversation with Rosalba on pedagogical documentation. We hope you enjoy listening.
Good morning. Welcome back, Rosalba. We're so happy to have you back here on our podcast channel to discuss the pedagogy of listening. We are going to dive right in and begin with our first question on when we think of listening, we think of it as a general sense, using our ears to hear what children are saying. Is there something specific we're listening for?
Well, thank you. I just want to say thank you again for having me back. This is wonderful. And I'm so happy to be talking about the pedagogy of listening today. So I'm going to start a little bit just unraveling the question. The word listen to me has seemed to become more acknowledged and maybe even more practiced over time. But I think about what are we really listening for? Or to who? On November 20th was International Children's Day, and the theme this year was the better future for every child. Recently being looked as the global COVID pandemic, which has affected the rights of every child, we more so now have to listen to children beyond the pandemic, not only because we want to help them, but also because they can help us. And if we truly need to trust and believe in this reciprocal listening, I believe that this would be very helpful. We need to be listening to children so that they can express their ideas, their thoughts, their fears, but also to lift us up or to acknowledge our thoughts and feelings as well as theirs, so that we can both or together fear together and to stand with them. Also, when we're talking about listening to children, it gives us this different perspective of acknowledging their knowledge, their own knowledge, their intelligence, and it leads us to further conversations and dialogues with children.
Wonderful. Thank you. It's so multifaceted, isn't it? And just so wonderful that you focused on what we can learn from children when we do listen to them. What does listening with all our senses mean?
So when I again, going back to the pedagogy of listening and listening with all our senses, listening is this fundamental to the Reggio Emilia approach, which is the basis for their programs in pedagogical approaches and thinking, and for its political approach. This involves dialogues, and not dialogues just with educators and other professionals, but with families as well, the community and the culture. So when I came across the pedagogy of listening many years ago in the book, The 100 Languages of Children, written by Forman, Gandini, and Edwards, where Carlina Rinaldi has a chapter in the book, and she talks really in depth about the pedagogy of listening. This really spoke to me. She and as we know, if we know a little bit about Carlina, she's worked very closely with Loris Malaguzzi since the early 70s and so forth. She's a consultant, a pedagogist, and so forth. But I became very interested in the pedagogy of listening as a deeper way of knowing and being for professional growth and for personal growth. Carla explains in the chapter that the pedagogy of listening is a search for meaning. And so this really kind of stuck with me. Listening is an important part in achieving and continuous search for meaning. How can we find or help children find meaning in what they do? Who is the child? Let's go back and think about the view of the child. And I can't help but think about the view of the child or the image of the child. And it's one of the guiding principles in Reggio Emilia. And for me, this has really sustained too my years of thinking with the Reggio approach, is that there is this way that is a point of a beginning, as opposed to also the image of the educator. But as our, I look at ourselves as these educational leaders and or leaders or researchers or working alongside children, taking the ideas of the view of a child is really important. We all have different views of children or the image of the child, and this is important to bring this perspective. How do we view the child? How do we act on it? How do we listen? And how do we be with children? And how can we also do this for ourselves in the search for meaning? We must ask ourselves why and how and what. This constant sort of questions children ask. Children come with so many entry points, as we may know, working with children in classrooms and so forth. And they come across these many types of questions or entry points in their daily lives. And naturally, they have many perspectives that they search for meaning. They go about searching for meaning in so many different ways. And if we believe in the view of the child as this active, competent, and strong person, like they do in Reggio, not as a view of the child as fragile or, you know, cute or incapable, then we see more than the possibilities to learning and teaching happening here. And with that, there's a listening that comes with that. So understanding and believing the theory, building that gives us this meaning for children, their thinking, their theories are really important for us to really acknowledge and to think with, and to also express each other's theories, because becomes this sort of reciprocal relationship of listening to each other, to listen to each other's theories, to listen to each other's questions, acknowledging their questions and their theories, and finding ways to support each other. This, to me, is really the talk about listening. This is why listening with all our senses to children's theories needs to be expressed, communicated, and exchanged with others. Carlina also mentions in her writings of the pedagogy of relationships and listening that she sort of has talked about the meanings of listening. And I just want to highlight, I know there's a whole list of them, but I want to highlight a few from an article that she wrote back in 2001 for Innovations. And it's actually in the chapter book as well in the 100 Languages. And when we talk about the listening of all our senses, not only with our ears, but with all our senses, with our eyes, or everything. It's a new way of thinking, or a new world sort of unfolds the meaning of listening. And it's really important to think with this. Carlina points out 14 major points in listening that you can definitely find. We don't have all this. I mean, I could talk a lot about pedagogy of listening here today, but I think you can, I just wanted to highlight a few. But really taking the time to listen, because something happens in that moment. Something simple can be really extraordinary. And it can become about, there's that way of listening that you can really connect with meaning. So I guess with listening with our senses has this ability for us to be open and sensitive. It can recognize that we all have unique ways of seeing the world, and we should have the right to share these perspectives. And when you really think from the heart, something different happens, a deeper reflective dialogue happens. Listening has become something different, and listening generates more questions, more curiosity, more thinking together, and it sort of connects the heart and mind. And I think about the poem from Loris Malaguzzi about the giraffe, and it's this idea of the heart and mind of the giraffe. They're so far apart. And he talks about education being this way, and talking about how nice it would be if sort of the two can come together a little bit closer. So I continuously think with this in mind, that the heart and the mind sort of need to be connected. And it's another way of bringing our listening to the core. So we have to keep revisiting listening. And that also takes this part of how we see the image of ourselves as educators, and how we see the image of the child.
Thank you. I really love that poem of Laura's Malaguzzi with the giraffe, and it's in my office, and it's a good reminder of making sure that you do connect the heart and mind when you are with children and in programs. Let's just to go a little bit deeper in the Reggio philosophy, there is the idea that listening produces questions and not answers. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes. And again, thinking with this is it becomes this way that we have to remember an important part of being an educator, or, you know, working alongside children requires this idea of a relationship built on mutual trust, respect, and expectations. And I believe that relationships are key, as they do reflect the well-being and belonging of each of us. And so then our places together with children should also reflect this. So when I think about listening, and, you know, listening with more questions than answers, we think about the environment, and we talked about environment in the last podcast, and the environment plays that third teacher. It's really important to think with that, because children can really perceive that listening as a communication piece. Children are the greatest listeners. They watch, they listen, with all their senses to the things we do, the way we behave, the way we are in the classrooms, the way we are in our environments, and so forth. It's this living way of being, and that's really important to take into consideration. So we want to be sure that this relationship is trusting and respecting relationships, as well as we act on our living spaces that we share with children on a daily basis, is that they're places of research, they're places of experiments, investigations, and explorations, and everyone has that right to be in that space to do those type of things together or on their own. And this is why listening is this place of questions.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Maybe we can dive into a little bit about how does listening create a context for making learning visible? Now, Rosalba will be joining us for another podcast on pedagogical documentation, but this one, maybe we can start the conversation here. Thanks, Rosalba.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, again, that idea of making learning visible, which again, taken, you know, I think about the Reggio approach and thinking about documentation in all these years, but talking also about the pedagogy of listening is not only, it's not only a pedagogy that we use in the schools, in our childcare centers and so forth, but it's also a way of life and an attitude. And I guess this is what I've developed and learned from this philosophy. It can be a tool, a sharing children and adults learning and thinking, but it can also be more and about taking on our responsibilities for what we are sharing. Listening is one of those important attitudes for identity, and identity starting with, you know, pretty much how we move and how we behave, how we bring to our schools and so forth. And as educators, as listeners, for example, again, something that I get, that Carlina points out in the 100 Languages book, the process of making this learning visible is important. So as children communicate with their ideas, we talk about the educator as this listener. So communicating their ideas through different ways, they are understanding more about themselves, the world, and about their curiosities. So using different languages, and we've heard the term the 100 languages before, and there's also a poem in there to look at. But this is, the languages doesn't mean that we have tons of materials for children, you know, tons of loose parts. It's nothing. It's not like that. It's what, it's how we can, as educators, support the observation, how we listen, and how we guide and research alongside children. And so children continue to self-evaluate themselves. We can use this idea of retesting theories and show it in different languages, so in different ways, and it'll all depend on what languages we sort of choose for children or together with children, and ways to express these thoughts. And they are, as they are self-reflecting, there's many changes that come along the way, and how do we how do we capture this? And again, our this whole idea or our task here is not only to allow the different points of view, but also to negotiate and nurture through exchanges and comparing these ideas, critiquing them, sharing, and perhaps like rethinking or relaunching an idea back. Children will learn to learn, but the group of children become part of this teaching process as well. So they become researchers, and this is really important. So documentation is visible listening, and it ensures that it is present for its importance. So how to make this visibility possible is we talk about different ways. We talk about collecting data, we talk about taking notes, we talk about videos, drawings, etc. There's so many different ways that we collect children's work. And collecting this means that the teachers, the educators, the children, they review, they analyze, they interpret, and they prepare sort of documentation along the way. And they're consistently looking at this data, and they're consistently looking at the work in progress. So, and sometimes it's posted for others to share, and that's leaving space for different viewpoints, which is important. Observation, documentation, and interpretation are all sort of woven together. There's a sort of the spiral effect, because what happens is they're continuous. It's a continuous learning that happens. And it's also a place or a space that can deepen and change. So documentation is a way, it's a way of the daily life of school. Yes, it's the daily life of what happens in school and or in the child care center. And it becomes a way of collecting an experience or ways of continuously review and interpreting. You can't do one without the other. You can't do observation and without interpretations and so forth. So it has to be continuous. It has to continuously be supported. Educators have to be working alongside children to do this and to bounce ideas off of each other, to perhaps even come back with different questions for children to further research. So the documentation is living. It's a living piece of document. It continuously could change. It's not permanent, and it shouldn't be permanent. It's a story that can be the process, and it becomes more of this learning piece, and it shares its values as well. It shares its values about our, who we are, about ourselves, about the children. So we should, you know, to just put this in a whole nutshell, and I really tried to put this, really condense it, so that we should look at documentation in so many different ways. But I also think as documentation, and people don't like to use this word assessment, but documentation is this constant way of us looking at how do we assess the work, how do children assess their work, how to reassess it. And it's part of that whole learning process. It's really important to be part of it. So if we could look at the word assessment in a different way, as a way of relationship between documentation and assessment, if we could see those sort of as a relationship, then there's this nice way of understanding the process of learning happening, and we could see that. And so that's why I just wanted to end with sort of this quote from the 100 Languages book on the chapter on the pedagogy of listening. And I'm wondering if I could just share that now. So I took this piece just from and I think this could be a good lead in for us to be thinking about the next podcast on documentation. And Carlina writes, "We don't have to teach them to ask why, because inside each human being is the need to understand the reasons, the meaning of the world around us, the meaning of our life. We believe that it is important to try to reflect on the children's questions and understand why they are asking why. What are their connections? What are their reflections? Why do they ask the why? Children ask why not only when they speak directly, but also through the 100 languages. So there is a mix of practical and philosophical concerns in their questionings, attitude, and their effort to understand the meaning of things and the meaning of life." So this is why I feel like that's so important to be when we talk about documentation, is that we look at this way of making documentation pretty, but also it is a process of showing learning. So we should really be very mindful of watching for that and you know, sharing that piece with children, with adults, with colleagues and so forth. So yeah, that's.
Thank you. I think that that's, I really like that reflection on the quote that we just ended with, because it is, what is your why? We're asking that of educators, and now we're reflecting on it as why the children are asking why. So I like that quote as it highlights that, but just the value of documentation as a process of collecting data to study as an educator. So oftentimes, like you mentioned that, you know, it doesn't always have to look pretty. There's value in collecting to understand, to go deeper into the why. So thank you very much for your time today, Rosalba. We look forward to the next podcast where you're going to really dive deep into pedagogical documentation and how it's a multi-layered process, as you mentioned, as you started to mention here. So again, we thank you, and we look forward to our next conversation.
Great. Thank you so much.